I've told you many times, and I'll just say it one more time, that is my favorite musician, the great Shirley Scott. And she teams up on this number, which you'll hear Eddie later, Eddie Lockjaw Davis, on a nifty little number called Skillet. And it's from Lockjaw Davis's cookbook series. This was volume 2, in which I'm playing from, recorded in, can you guess, 1958. I always remind people that Shirley Scott was the official organist at Abyssinia Baptist Church in Harlem, and was at one time the spouse of, I'm forgetting names now, jazz musician. I'll remember it in a minute. And was just so exceptional. And this is why I love this period, because the musicians, they didn't play around. they were utterly devoted to the music that they created. And that is why it lasts. So Shirley Scott is on organ. She's also the composer and lyricist here. Jerome Richardson is on flute. George Duvivier is on bass and bass guitar. And Arthur Edgehill is on drums. Again, it's called Skillet, and it's from Davis's cookbook series. I said Davis, meaning Eddie Lockjaw Davis, from his cookbook series of 1958. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. We're picking up from where we left off with each other yesterday. I was a little miffed, and you might have determined that, with this idea of referring, making specific reference to the deceased, those who died in that awful fire in the Bronx, New York, making sure that people understood they were Muslims. Muslims. And I shuddered because I thought somebody is keeping watch there at the news desk, and they should know that it was not necessary, unless you're playing to A, the reporter's own personal problems, and to the broader audience to which the news service was relating. That just is it still burns me up, pardon the pun, but it really set me off yesterday. But we have other things that we can do today. I wanted to continue, if you will. Yeah, I'm going with you. If you want to continue with it, they're now saying that the faulty safety doors were the reason for this fire, and that they had raised this issue many times before the fire actually occurred. And why are we not surprised? Why are we not surprised? There is always an explanation when people die for no good reason. And the last thing they will say is negligence. That's why they died. Negligence. And negligence by the owners, because this I understand, the arrangement here, is that although this housing complex was built by the feds in 1974, it actually ended up being owned by a group of investors because by then the tide had begun to shift. The population shift had begun in the Bronx. Too many people of color coming in. And the whites were leaving. And they left behind them housing stock that was not in very good shape. But the investors didn't care. Money was coming in. People were still paying their rents. And they were making out literally like bandits. So it is no surprise that the fireproof doors that were supposed to contain a fire, if one occurred, that would give the folks a chance to get out and get out safely, or that it would attenuate the impact of the flames, not reaching them as they would if they had no fireproof doors. And you see time and again, you see the marked difference between how people of color are treated and how whites are treated. You see it all the time. And it is unbelievable to me that there hasn't been a groundswell of protest about these things. People's lives literally are at stake. And they don't care. They'll always have a ready explanation for why tragedies occur, tragedies like this occur. There's a reasonable explanation always at the ready. Or it's not that the owners and the people who are supposed to maintain a level of livability in that complex, in that massive building, they're not at fault. Oh, absolutely not. They collect their rents on time. They move against late payments on time. They try to get people out on time. You miss one day and you get papers served under your door. In a situation like this, it should be absolutely intolerable that people are paying with their lives and their children's lives for this level of negligence and abuse, all coming from one basic source, and that is the belief that the color of your skin, still in this day and age, in 2022, will determine what happens to you in the society. I'm infuriated about this. And I'm appalled, frankly, that every time a major tragedy occurs, the powers that be can predict they will weather the storm. Yeah, there'll be a lot of noise, but nothing else. And all they need is a little more time to have things quiet down, because with time, people will forget. what time people would even forgive them. I've seen this happen so many times. And I have to ask, is something wrong with the people? Are people not sufficiently upset at their lives that they have to live? Not for any fault of their own, but they're put in these positions. They're not in charge. But there's no organization against those things that put them at a great disadvantage. And in fact, imperil their lives, as we saw in the fire in the Bronx. When will people get to the point of what this is all about? You're not important. You do not matter. Your check does. You, we could live without. There'll be a lot of talking, but there will be no action. This is a repeat offense all over the city of New York and many, many other places, many other cities across the nation. And people wonder, how come there are so many ghettos? Because that too is the plan. They could lay the blame on people who abandoned their own communities. Not because they weren't getting the services that they were paying for, but because they have a genetic predisposition to destroying things. I'm saying again, in Trinidad, the phrasing is, look sharp, look sharp. Which means pay very close attention to what is happening in your life and in the life of your community. And take action. Unless you agree that many more should die for no good reason. Unless you think that's a good plan and you support it, there's got to be a breaking point, and we're way past that, nationally speaking. We're way past that, and still people are reluctant to advocate in their own interests, to say, we will not tolerate this kind of treatment. We will not put up with this. It's very sad, but it is also very true that we get the level of treatment that we indicate we will tolerate. We will get that kind of treatment. Somebody ought to get wise and stand up and say, no more people dying. No more people dying because of negligence, because we are dismissed, because we don't matter. Because it's all about just let your checks come in and we don't care what the heck happens to you after that. Even though we are responsible. And that attitude is repeated within the archaic systems that we have that do not enforce, do not see it as their job to maintain standards so that people's lives are safe. In fact, the thinking is the exact opposite. Oh, well, they're used to this. They could live with this. They wouldn't dare suggest that in other communities. No way. Okay. So what are we talking about? I have some points that we never did get to talk about so far. And they're important, so I'd like to raise some of them and see what your reaction is. By the way, the number to call is 888-874-4888. And I tell you this ahead of time so that you don't have to wait and then, you know, let time elapse. If you're interested, just get ready. You have the number and you know what to do. So I wanted to ask, by the way, that you pay attention to what's going on in Washington, D.C., because it raises some questions about priorities. The president, Joe Biden, I'm sure he means well in his way, but we're getting the same hurry up and wait. Time has run out. We can't wait. And we shouldn't make him feel comfortable that we can wait. There are certain things he's got to do, and he's got to get them done now. He's got to move. This business of waiting to see, well, what will he do next? Well, he knows what he has to do for constituencies that could hurt him. We're not one of those constituencies. He's absolutely sure we will do nothing to hurt him, but in fact to protect him. Even as we lose. So, here's the first question. Is Trump succeeding at undermining Biden's presidency with his parallel presidency? Have Republicans fully yielded the party to Trump? I talked about it months ago, about the parallel presidency that Donald Trump was constructing. Some people might have thought I was kidding, or that's not going to happen. But it was so clear what he was doing. Even before he left the White House, he constructed a whole different organization, a whole different structure, to continue functioning as a president, even though he was not elected, even though nobody asked him. He just knew that that's what he was going to do because he had plans. Number one plan is to make money, lots of money, because he's getting older and he has blown a lot of cash by being careless. And he doesn't have as much money as he thought he would have by this point. He surely thought he would be a billionaire. He's not. So he methodically started organizing his unofficial but official presidency and continues even as I speak. So is he succeeding at undermining Biden's presidency with his parallel presidency? And have Republicans fully yielded the party to him? There's no question that he decided he'd claim it. He'd just go and take it. The question I'm asking is, have they given in to him and let him have it? And what is what do you see as a consequence of something like this? Here's another question. Just how much has Trump's failed coup attempt on January the 6th last year cost the District of Columbia, of Washington, D.C.? Who picks up the tab? And what was the cost? See, we're not dealing with these questions. These questions have to be answered. Somebody has to pay the cost. But even Biden is being very quiet. It's as if, okay, look, it's already happened. It did not explode as we expected it to, but although it did explode in a way. But let sleeping dogs lie. Let's just move beyond it. People want to move beyond it. I say, no. It costs. You have extra police. You have people who clean up. You have sanitation workers. You have, the tab is huge for what happened on January the 6th. What is the cost? And who is expected to pay it? What they're going to do is to find a very interesting and creative way to let the black folks of Washington, D.C. bear the brunt of it. They will cut back on social services and on other programs that they need. Because they will now claim we have all these huge bills. Trump is not going to pay them. His standard operating procedure would be to claim, I have no responsibility for this whole thing. People just decided to come down to Washington, D.C. and do whatever they wanted to do. So everybody hands everybody else the responsibility, but in the end, we know what's going to happen. What's going to happen is that the already beleaguered people of Washington, D.C. will be made to pay for this outrageous demonstration, this so-called fledgling coup by Donald Trump. And they will pay for it because it will come out, literally come out of their pockets in terms of social services and other services that they deserve that they will not get. So you see, nobody has raised these points. And so, with nothing said, nobody is on notice. Nobody is on notice about where is this money going to come from for this crazy day, January 6th. Trump will say, well, I didn't encourage it. They just kind of showed up. And certainly, Washington, D.C. should be expected that under circumstances like that, it has to provide services that will eventually cost a lot of money. You have to pay overtime. You've got to call in special equipment, special services in case people get hurt, all kinds of things. It's a huge bill, but nobody's talking about it. And yet, people suspect that when it comes time, when it comes due to be paid, it is not Trump who is going to pay. It is the people of Washington, D.C. who will have to pay. And then I have this final question for you. I wanted you to think about it. 8 years ago, 61-year-old Yao Pan Ma was savagely assaulted in the Bronx while he collected soda cans so he could pay his rent. Jared Powell, a 50-year-old black man, had pleaded not guilty of several charges, including attempted murder and hate crimes, at his arraignment last June the 22nd. But 8 years later, as we learned, in this brutal attack, Yao Pan Ma has died of his severe wounds. A security camera captured a man, prosecutors identified as Powell, stomping repeatedly on Yao Pan Ma's head. Does this case make a strong argument for the state's harshest sentence? That's the question I ask. Okay, so you have three things that you should consider, and the phone lines are now open at 888-874-4888. Choose your topic, and let's hear what you have to say about it. 888-874-4888. Okay, this might be a good place to take a little break. Oh, no, we have too many people on the queue already. All right, Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon, PRN family. I am going to beg your indulgence, please. I thought you were going to allow us to maybe call in on the first topic that you shared, the continuation of the fire in the Bronx, because there's more information that I think is just absolutely heartbreaking. This building had 174 open violations. Some of them included heat. Some of them included the fact that the doors that are supposed to be self-closing were not closing. But the absolute tragedy of all of this is that the person who is listed as the landlord, his name is Rick Gropper, is on the new mayor-elect Adams transition team for housing. So I certainly hope, and I think there needs to be a collective outcry to the mayor to rather than just give platitudes about, the losses and the tragedy of this situation, somebody on his transition team, specifically for housing, is responsible for this. What is he going to do about it?
Well, it's a good place to start, to welcome him to what's ahead as New Yorkers see it. This is what the mayor does, a newly installed mayor. This is outrageous.
So you pay to play. This bill, I mean, when you go, this is public information. You can go into the system and look at how long. Just awful violations in this building. And so this is the person who's now going to be responsible for shaping his housing policy. Someone who's a slum landlord. He needs to answer for this.
Yes, he does.
I just had to get this off my chest.
Well, thank you. Thanks for bringing that to our attention, because that fits into how we are looking at the relationship between powers and the people. You have a black mayor who was a former cop. I knew him back then. And this is the arrangement And there's, I mean, it's okay. The excuse we'll get, what do you think would be the explanation we'd get?
He didn't know.
He didn't know, and nobody told him. And yet, vetting is what they're supposed to do. This is housing, which is one of the leading bases of corruption in the city of New York. So you can't say you didn't know, because that's part of the vetting process. Who is related to whom? Who is connected to whom? What is the expectation of their role?
Utrice, in the same way that I could go into the system and get this information, so could he. So that he cannot claim that he doesn't know or didn't know or shouldn't have known.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. That's an awesome contribution today. Thank you very much. Ray from Florida, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I wish you would identify the name, rather than just talking generalities like the building was owned by an LLC. What's the name of the LLC? Who is the CEO? And how can people mail them a letter or phone them or an email? Let's get into the specifics. And then the same thing with the management company. Who? What's its name? Who's its CEO? How do we contact him? And the city has building inspectors, and someone was assigned to that building. What's his name? What's his address? Why is he falling down? And so that's related to the building with the fire. Now, you were commenting about not building community. Well, let's say the Catholic Church wanted to acquire one of these buildings, and they put a restriction: we only allow Catholics in this building. That's building a community of Catholics. That's illegal.
Yes, it is.
So on the one hand, you're saying advocating building a community, but certain communities would be illegal to build. Skin color
Catholics,
or ethnic background or whatever, religious beliefs.
No, the Catholics already have enough to account for.
Well, I just use as an example.
Of the role that the church and the Catholic organizations have played in decimating communities. They already have that burden, and they haven't adequately expunged themselves of blame in many of these accusations that have been leveled against them. So they're not pure of heart. They're not.
I just picked one at random off the top of my head. Let's
And here's the thing. Okay. I appreciate your spirit in suggesting, you know, who is responsible, how do we write letters, and we're beyond that. I'm sorry to say. It's way beyond that.
So public shaming isn't going to change anything?
Oh, no. They come from a world of public shaming. They've learned how to resist it very well. And public shaming is nothing. In fact, in some places, it's a mark of distinction. There were people who hate me out there and moved against me, but I vanquished them. Why? Because I know the judge. I know the chief court justice. That's the level at which these people are operating. They didn't get to make hundreds of millions of dollars by being, ordinary. They have extraordinary access to power. That's what has kept them in place for so long and protected. Patricia, the first caller today, just told us that one of the leading members of the LLC that owns this building, this fiery building, is on his transition team. And specifically, relating to housing. What do you think that means? He has been captured.
Yeah.
An arrangement already exists between the newly elected mayor and the old forces of housing exploitation in the city of New York, which makes billions of dollars a year on the backs of people who die because they're cold. You see?
Okay, thank you for
this.
This
is how it works.
Information. All right, I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray, for calling in.
You're welcome.
Ed from Queens,
Bye.
You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Chief. How are you?
Good afternoon. Okay, I'm hanging in.
Yeah, you and me both. I wanted to address basically that you the two questions that you first raised about Trump and his alternative government and the cost of the January 6th insurrection, or whatever you want to call it. Respectively, Congress has already okayed $30 million for repairs and the rectification that was needed to the Capitol after the January 6th. They've already approved this, and I think it's up for the Senate. I think it'll be approved too. That's one thing that El Presidente Biden isn't talking about. It's estimated that the total cost could run in excess of $500 million with special equipment, repairs to statues, counseling for several members of White House staff and Washington staff for the traumas. All of these things encompassed could run in the neighborhood of $500 million. And the man who caused it, in my opinion, should be held completely liable for it. But I fear
absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, I agree.
But I fear he won't be. And that brings me back to your first question. Even though the Biden-Kamala Harris administration, in my opinion, wouldn't take much to undermine, he has totally undermined it. A lot of people are asleep. This man is the head of the Republican Party, no matter any way you want to cut it. And with all of the federal judgeships that were appointed under his auspices when he was quote-unquote president, he's got a lot of control. There's a thing called gerrymandering. It was very popular in New York and on the East Coast, and it's getting popular in the South. We got to remember, we still have the Electoral College. The presidency is still a numbers game. There's a calculation that you can make that will make you president of the United States, despite of the popular vote. And that hasn't been changed. So we're still in the same position. If this man can pull it out again, which I honestly believe he will, you know, we got hell to pay.
But what, therefore, could work as a strategic advantage for just the way things are? What in that gives the people a strategic advantage?
What, against Trump?
Yes.
The whole reason why he lost in the first place was the Democratic campaign, anything but Trump. But what we're seeing now is that anything but Trump isn't really all that much better. But in my opinion, Biden is a joke. I mean, he's backtracked on everything he stood for from his campaign. And he's got a wait-and-see attitude for this and a wait-and-see attitude for that. He hasn't formed any type of constructive alliance with his vice president. Her staff are leaving, claiming a toxic work environment. I mean, you have no infrastructure. You have no substance. You won the election on a humble. And you haven't even accessed he hasn't even accessed the presidential powers to mandate some type of free form of health care for the remainder of his terms while we're in the middle of a pandemic. You can't even, I'm not a political scientist. That would be my first thing. That goes without saying. and you can't even make that happen. You can't even manifest that. So what good are you? I mean, you know, what good are you? How many people are going to be
coming across as? Is he coming across as weak? Therefore, giving Trump a boost, looking even stronger than he was when he was actually in office.
He's coming across as impotent, beyond weak. He's coming across as soft and limp, beyond weak. I mean, you know, from his verbal foibles to his lack of action, he's coming across as totally weak. And people are going to see that. We'll see. Let's watch what happens in the midterms. And then with all the gerrymandering that's been going on in the South and the changing of districts, you know, that's why I want to get out of this country, man. That's why I want to get out of this country. Because I don't see brighter days for this. I don't see brighter days for this.
All right. Thank you so much, Ed, for your contribution today. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Trees.
Hello.
Hello, Florida. Be happy you're there. It's still 16 degrees here. So it's sunny and bitter. I think it was Patricia that called to talk about the point of the mayor having the man who owns the building in the Bronx in his cabinet, and I saw that too yesterday. And, you know, when you're talking, sometimes you forget half the stuff you want to say, but I did, that stood out yesterday like a sore thumb to me, and it was very upsetting. And it seems, well, I think people, I get so frustrated when people vote, and they just vote for one thing, and they don't listen to what the candidate is saying or what they're bringing forth. And, you know, before this mayor got in an office, I had been working with a woman, a wonderful woman in Flatbush, who's trying to save an African-American burial. And it's an easy save. It's a small piece of land. And Adams got involved in this, bringing this land into so-called low and middle-income housing a while ago. But, you know, I think in the community, something like this is really important to preserve and save, and very symbolic. And I think that people in New York are getting more and more jaded when it comes to this crap that they call low-income housing, because there is no low or middle-income or affordable housing, virtually none. What they do is they seize the land, and they build, you know the 80-20 plan, but it's usually even more than that. And so people are just, you know, like, their eyes glaze over when you start talking about this affordable housing. Affordable housing here is also something that you literally need to fight over. You have to get into a lottery system. I mean, it's insane. You have to get into a lottery system to get into a building. So I don't have any faith in this mayor from the get-go. I didn't vote for him because I also see that he's wholly owned by the forces of the Democratic Party. He'll toe the line. He's going to do it better than anybody else could have done it. So I look very, very upsettingly forward to what he's going to do when it comes to the COVID thing and how much more he's going to tighten that noose up around us. But, you know, the only thing I heard the mayor say yesterday when he was talking about the building burning down was that these people were immigrants and they shouldn't be afraid to come forward, that they're not going to be thrown out of the country. That's all he had to say. And that man was standing right next to him, that man who caused this place. And yes, he caused this place. He has blood on his hands today because of that many violations. I mean, there's no way that he could walk away from it. In my opinion, he should be found criminally negligent. And I think the mayor would do himself a favor right now to get out from under this thing and fire him. Just nip it in the bud. Because if you think people aren't going to start, yes, they will start raising questions on this one. And it'll be a slow simmer. But I really think that he makes himself look very, very bad by keeping, frankly, Matrice, I feel he's a murderer. He's a murderer by neglect. Okay? You decided to sit on all those violations. You decided that the bottom line was only your money. And you took a chance and you killed a whole bunch of people. So to me, there's only one thing for this man, and that's prison. He has to be held responsible. And I think that it's very scary watching the mayor and the alliances that he has made. He has made no bones about telling people he's very pro development. That means more and more of our blocks are being torn down. I don't know if you've heard this, but this is really stunning to me. They intend to tear down the entire Pennsylvania Hotel, which is about the same size as Macy's. And, you know, when I looked at the grandeur of this hotel, and it is grand because it was built by McKinn, Mead, and White, one of the highest, the most prestigious architectural firms at the turn of the century. So it's got a lot of beauty in it. And there's a ton of things you can do with it. But one of the things I said to myself last week, just looking at it, if you didn't want to do one thing with it, if you wanted to just spend nothing, you know, in terms of remodeling and redecorating and all that, you know, there are so many rooms in that building, and there is such a huge homeless population, and they would be a good size for a single person to live in, that they could probably, they would have shelter and a place to live. And, you know, if you didn't want to do anything else with it, but this idea of our society, and the only reason why we're tearing things down here in New York is because there's no other blue-collar jobs that pay anything anymore. That's it. So what we do is we cut off our arms to get a job, putting our arm back on again. That's how we do it here in New York City, and it's happening all over the country. But I have no bones about Eric Adams. I pretty much can see where he's going to go. As far as Trump, I agree with you that he raised a dual presidency. However, he is not making the traction that he wanted because half of his constituents to a vaccine. And when he went out in public and said, I'm okay with the vaccine, I think that released the mask from his face for a lot of his blind followers. They really thought that he was going to stick with them. So I don't think he's going to get the traction at this point that he thought he was going to get. Because not only did he go along with the vaccine, but a lot of people, regular people that followed him to Washington and thought that they were doing what he wanted him to do, he walked away.
You really think that Donald Trump has gone along with this infamous liar? You really think that he is going along with the vaccine? You really think that?
Wait, say that again. I didn't understand the question.
You really think that Donald Trump is supporting... Mm-hmm. The idea that people should get the vaccine, because he did too.
No, he's not. He's saying what you need to say to get elected. Good. Of course not. He couldn't give a shit what you told him. Sorry. He couldn't care if you take it or not. But one thing he does care about with the hugest ego in the world is getting the credit. He is not going to let anybody else get that glory. He knows that when he was there, this concoction was brewed up, this witch's brew was made under his administration. And if somebody's going to get credit for it, he wants the credit for it. And if this is what he has to do to get in, he's going to go ahead and do it. But the problem for him is he has a solid hold on 30% of the United States, but 15% of that 30 is very, very strongly opposed to the vaccine. So between that and throwing his constituents under the bus that went out to Washington, D.C. that day and happened to get arrested, and not doing what he said he was going to protect them. He said they wouldn't be arrested. He said all those things. Well, they're starting to feel that now. And many people that I know that are Trumpers are feeling, they're not just feeling abandoned, but they're just saying to themselves, you know what, he's just like everybody else. And they're just like, I don't care. So, and he did it to himself. How come people don't know? And yes, he's very shifty, like a mafioso. That's true. But on other stuff, he's as dumb as a
liar. But you have to be smart.
He's not that smart.
You know, he's not that smart. This is the thing.
No. He's just criminal smart. That's right. But
not
sadly,
smart.
When it comes to politics, he did not get that. The only thing he could have done to save himself was to hang on to that anti-vax stance he had as long as he could, because that would have drawn more people in or kept his base solid. But he lost half his base now. I know people that were crazy about him. And last week I talked to a guy that all he did was badmouth him and said, that guy threw us under the bus, and we thought he meant what he said. And I told this, you know, I told you this. I told you that Trump is like a charlatan, a maniac, a crazy. I said, I just can't understand how you couldn't see it. Like, I don't know what glasses you're wearing, but it's so clear and obvious. I think almost everybody who lives in New York that this guy, why would you want somebody like that to be the president? He's a criminal. Why would you want... But he's an open criminal. Come out and tell us, you're right.
He's still stuck in a time warp. he's stuck in the time warp of, I could manage my own fame. I keep reminding people where he got this notion of being the ultimate salesman from Don King. That's who he studied.
That's true.
He studied Don King because Don King showed up in Zaire with two blank pieces of paper and got the signatures of the two most powerful people so he could stage the rumble in the jungle.
Right.
Don King is a master. And
right.
Immediately he was drawn to the idea, the bodaciousness of this man. I got to learn how to do that. He can't. He hasn't been able to do it, but that's who he studied. That was his the switch that went off in his head. Thanks, Gwen, for calling in and contributing today. Always meaningful.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. E from Edgewater, how are you? I haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah,
are you there?
I'm here and I'm listening.
Okay, good. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there, and you know, I'm just very disappointed in the American people, and especially in the PRN audience. Keep falling back on this trick that we've all been tricked by. Donald Trump is the perfect Trump card for the system to use any way they want to use him. And it got people believing that he really became the president. Do you really think that the system would allow a man of Donald Trump's ilk to be a president for 4 years of this country? Do you really believe that?
What should I believe?
You should believe that Donald Trump is a tool that the system uses to have us divided to such an extent that I'm almost feel like jumping off the tallest building because I can't believe that we've actually been tricked this easily and this good by this man who hung out with Jeffrey Epstein and went on the plane on the Lolita Express and all these things that he was involved in. He was a Democrat supporter of Hillary and Bill Clinton. How could he then become this person that they want to make him out to be? If Joe Biden won the election on November 8th and was declared the winner of the election, how come for 2 months he's the president, he doesn't say something that Donald Trump cannot have a rally on the same day that they're going to be counting up these votes, which is just a pomp and circumstance thing anyway. They know he's the winner for 2 months now. They have to go through this process just for tradition. And they wanted exactly what happened. They wanted to happen. That's what the system wanted to happen. And everybody could blame Donald Trump for it. But what about Joe Biden? Isn't he responsible for Washington, D.C. and the Capitol? If he was the president at the time, doesn't he have the responsibility to say, this will not be allowed? Donald Trump is now just a regular citizen. He's not the president anymore. This is not allowed.
I hate to interrupt, but I have to because we're out of time. So please consider, E, calling back and finishing your presentation today. Okay? Please call back.
I usually try to do it on Friday, so maybe I'll have
Oh, okay.
Maybe I'll have the energy then. But right now, I'll leave it with that then. And
then,
continue. Thanks for taking my call. And
thank you. And I look forward to hearing from you on Friday. That brings us to the end of our program today. I could have listened to a lot more, but time is against us. So we'll come back to each other tomorrow and continue the conversation.
Bye-bye.